So every year at Seattle Insight, there is a theme of practice. And this year's theme, I'm so happy because I get to say this, transcendent dependent origination, also known as transcendental dependent arising, which is a lot of words for a 12-step process that gets you out of suffering and liberated from suffering. So we're going through one of these steps each month. We started with suffering. So for those of you who are new, you missed suffering. Congratulations. Last month we spoke about faith, and this month we're speaking about joy. And the idea is that each of the steps in the transcendent dependent origination, have to say it again, cycle, leads naturally to the next step. So here we are at joy, and I'll just offer up a definition of joy from the psychological realm. I'm also a therapist, so sometimes I get a bit lost in that world. But this definition of joy from Robertson Appiah from a 2025 study, I'm paraphrasing, but joy is a distinct, profound emotion, often intertwined with gratitude and love. Key strategies for sustaining joy include fostering positive relationships. That's all y'all here together and online. Engaging with nature and cultivating self-awareness. So this is something much bigger than happiness. And so when an email was sent out saying, "Hey, there's these topics that you can teach on," I was like, "Joy, I want to teach joy. That sounds great." Joy has been a huge part of my practice. And so I sat down and I started working on my talk. And I was having a hard time coming up with something to say about joy, despite it being very meaningful to me. So I called Judith and I was like, "Judith, you want to hear my talk?" And Judith's like, "Yeah." And I was like, "Joy. Well, duh." And I really didn't know what to say. I was like, this is a beautiful emotion, and how do I talk about it? So I started thinking about faith that gives way to joy. When I started on this path, I was dealing with some pretty significant mental health stuff. I was really miserable, dealing with depression stuff and trauma stuff, and no, I'm not. And so I got to thinking about, like, what was it about the path that took me from this really, really painful place to this place of pretty consistent joy? And when we start on this path, we are pretty lost in our own suffering. It may be more intense for some people than other people. But I think one of the key things is that before we get on the path, we feel trapped in our suffering. We feel like there's not really a way out of the pain in our minds and the pain of the world. And this path offers up a different story about this. This path says that there is an escape, which is interesting. There's a great book by Pema Chodron called The Wisdom of No Escape, which is letting go and giving up. And so much of the time on this path, what we're told to do is let go, give up control. And I think When we come into faith on the path, when we start to really see what it's bringing to us, what we actually get is a sense of control over our own suffering. And that is probably heretical to say in the Dharma world. That on some level, this is actually about having control over our own freedom. That's part of what faith does. And this sense of lack of control from a psychological perspective is one of the scariest things for humans. Three of the most difficult things for humans are feeling trapped, feeling powerless, and feeling isolated. And the cool thing about the Dharma and the cool thing about this path and the people who are on this path with us is that all of those things, feeling trapped, feeling powerless, and feeling isolated are addressed. And I think that's where the joy comes from. Yeah, so the cool thing about this kind of joy, or one of the cool things about it, is that it is not based on something outside of us. It's not based on getting something from the world. It's not based on what is happening in the world. This joy, this sense of freedom that arises out of our faith, it's coming from a place inside, and it cannot be taken away. And when we choose to step on this path, we're opening our hearts to the possibility of joy. A quote from Viktor Frankl: "Everything can be taken from a person, but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way." That ability to choose, it gives us a sense of self-efficacy, gives us a sense of freedom, gives us a sense of possibility, and out of that arises joy. But there is one problem. That we can have this faith, we can have this sense of possibility, but we have to do something, right? If we don't do something with what we have learned, we're going to fall back into dukkha, into suffering. I promised you I would use this word, so.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so essentially we have to get off of our buttocks and we have to act. For those of you who are not aware, there is a long-standing joke between Tim and I about buttocks and various synonyms for that word. So anyway, when we act, when we get off of our buttocks, we don't feel powerless, right? And powerlessness is one of these things that's really difficult for humans. And so we take action, we practice, we meditate, we hang out with Sangha, we hang out with good people, and this gives us a sense of joy. And this joy motivates us to do the same thing. It becomes this positive feedback loop. It's called a virtuous cycle, apparently, when a positive feedback loop leads to more good things happening. In my life, how many people online here have been on a retreat? Yeah. Okay. Lots of people. Okay. How many people? Okay. Never mind. I'm not going to ask that. I'll just say my experience. So I went on my first retreat. It was a week-long retreat, and it was not easy. I was in a really rough space. I was in grad school, and I was very stressed out and dealing with a lot of mental health stuff. And I sat this retreat, and it was really hard. And by the end of this retreat, I still hurt. My heart was still sad, but there was this peace and this steadiness. And like, I was like, I can be with what's here. And let me tell you what, that was motivating, right? There was some freedom that came from that. In that moment, I was like, I can get out of this suffering. All I got to do is go on the next retreat. Which is a lot better than, hey, I just got to go buy a pint of ice cream, or I got to drink a beer, or whatever. I just got to go on the next retreat. So this, when we get a taste of freedom, it gives us a sense of possibility and the joy, and we're like, I know the way out now. I'll just keep practicing. And when I was on this retreat, not only did my heart feel better, just my own heart, but I tasted something I had not tasted before, and that was this idea of Sangha. For those of you who've been on a retreat, you have probably felt that connection with all of these people who you've never talked to. And there's something really heart-opening about that. There's something that feels really, really good about being in the room with a bunch of people who are committed to kindness, committed to self-improvement, committed to caring for each other. And that sense of safety and that sense of shared purpose, that sense of commitment to kindness, that really touched my heart. And I bawled my eyes out at the end of my first retreat because I was like, I don't know if I can find that again. But again, there's always the next retreat, right? But the point being that one of the things that's so hard for us is isolation. And when we step onto this path, when we see, like, look, just take a moment, look around. Like you online, look at all the people, y'all here, check it out. All these people in this room, these are people committed to kindness, committed to care. Notice what your heart does in response to that. Maybe there's a little blip of joy. Maybe. I know I feel it. And that allows us, that sense of connection, that joy from that allows us to open our hearts to the world just a little more. And then the world starts touching us, and that gives way, gives rise to more joy. And again, it's this positive feedback cycle. Faith gives way to joy. Joy gives way to practice, and then more joy. But again, we got to do something with the joy. And what the neuroscience studies say is, if you have a positive emotion, spend time with it in mindfulness. There's great work by Rick Hansen. He wrote a couple of books, Buddha's Brain and Hardwiring Happiness, talking about how the mind is more likely to notice the negative and to wallow in the negative than to find the positive and wallow in the positive. Like we should wallow in the positive like a pig in a mud bog. Like that's what we want. And it doesn't take long. It's 5 seconds, 10 seconds. But the more we pay attention to our joy, the more the joy is likely to arise. That's just neuroscience for you. And the joy will start to arise spontaneously. So the other day I was driving across the river, and there's this road that goes up to the little town on the hill above where I live on the other side of the river. And every year they decorate this road with Christmas ornaments, holiday ornaments, and like hundreds of them. And it's a very narrow one-lane road, and it's beautiful trees, and there's a beautiful view of the Columbia River. So I was driving up this road the other day, and they had missed a couple of these Christmas ornaments, and it was a little bit breezy, and I could see them like in spinning on the trees and like sparkles coming off them. And I also happened to be talking to Judith on the phone. On my Bluetooth headset, I was on my Bluetooth, I didn't have the phone to my ear. And this is about joy rising spontaneously, right? So I'm driving up here, I'm being grateful for my town, I'm just like really appreciating these ornaments spinning in the wind, talking to my friend, and I just got overwhelmed with this just massive wave of joy. It was just this really beautiful moment. It's, you know, when this happens, it starts to happen. It's the culmination of us being on this path, having faith, no longer feeling powerless, having an actual sense of control over our own suffering, because we can do the work to free ourselves, and doing it in community with other amazing people with kind hearts. Yeah, all of you people, and you people online too. And this isn't just about us. This joy radiates outward into the world. Like any of you who have been around our teachers or the Ajahns have felt that joy radiating from them. It's not necessarily loud, but it's real and it's palpable. And your sense of joy that is cultivated on this path touches the people in your world, whether you know it or not. Like in the moments when I'm having joy and I walk through the grocery store, I see it impact people. They like, it startles them. And this is a way that we can make a better world just by being with this joy from this practice. And that was where I was going to end this talk until the invasion of Iran happened, and now my joy is residing next to the sorrow of what I'm seeing in the world, and I also happen to be at a training over the weekend. The things I may say may not reflect the values of Seattle Insight. Just want to put that out there. But I was at an anti-authoritarian training and they were talking about nonviolent resistance. And, in resistance, one of the key factors is joy. Joy allows us to be with the pain of the world without being overwhelmed and swept away. Joy allows us to keep standing up and speaking the truth and saying that we care and we want the world to be nonviolent. Joy allows us to stand up and continue to say in the face of so much resistance against it that all people matter, that trans lives matter, black lives matter, brown lives matter. Joy allows us to keep speaking up day after day after day without getting burnt out, because joy feeds our hearts and joy keeps us connected to each other. And joy, joy comes in many levels, right? And eventually it's pointing to something really important, that the joy we feel together is a sign of us being together, of our fundamental interconnection with each other, of the fact that we are all human and that we all suffer and that we all love and care and celebrate and have joy. And, yeah, it's worthy. It's powerful. Get up off your buttocks and keep cultivating joy. Yeah. Yeah, joy will take you a long way on freeing you from your suffering. Do keep at it. Do cultivate it. Do share it with the world. I'll finish with a poem. It's called Walking Meditation by Thich Nhat Hanh. Take my hand. We will walk. We will only walk. We will enjoy our walk without thinking of arriving anywhere. Walk peacefully, Walk happily. Our walk is a peace walk. Our walk is a happiness walk. Then we learn that there is no peace walk, that peace is the walk, that there is no happiness walk, that happiness is the walk. We walk for ourselves, we walk for everyone, always hand in hand. Walk and touch peace every moment. Walk and touch happiness every moment. Each step brings a fresh breeze. Each step makes a flower bloom under our feet. Kiss the earth with your feet. Print on earth your love and happiness. Earth will be safe when we feel in us enough safety.
Now, okay, joy. Yes, I also wanted to talk about joy. And as soon as I started thinking about joy, I had this image come into my mind. It's an image of pure joy. So my sister has a house on a lake east of Seattle. And a couple of years ago, I was visiting her for a few days. And my son and my daughter-in-law and my grandson and their dog, Bartleby, came out to have lunch with us on Sunday. So we had a lovely time. You know, it was really nice to see each other. We catching up and everything. I did notice that for the humans, there were little distractions. You know, my grandson had homework that was a little bit on his mind, and there was talk about what to get at the grocery store on the way home and something about work, and my sister and I had some plans for the next day that weren't fully organized. You know, the human mind, in other words. So after lunch, we went down to the lake, and my grandson and my daughter-in-law started throwing a stick in the water for Bartleby to go out and fetch. And this has not been something that he was totally into, but that day he really got into it. And I stood there on the shore of the lake and I watched that dog swim out, get that stick, come swimming back, deposit it over and over and over. And it was that image of Bartleby swimming back with the stick, and I swear, a smile on his face. And a couple of days later, a friend who knows my family asked me, oh, how was the lunch and everything? I said, it was great, but I said, you know who had the best time? It was Bartleby. And she said, why? And I said, because, and I know I'm assuming, I'm not in his head, but my strong impression was that dog was fully present. Yeah, he was not in the past, he was not in the future, he was not self-conscious. He was just there with the water and the stick. And so then I'm thinking, well, why is it so easy for a dog to be fully present? And it's so hard for humans. I will make an exception for very young humans, babies, toddlers, right? But as they get older, especially when they start school, they start to take on responsibilities, they have expectations, regrets, frustrations, they get self-conscious, and it just becomes harder. And it's not like I wanted to trade my adult human mind for a dog's mind or a toddler's mind. I didn't. In spite of the fact that adult human minds are creating a lot of problems in this world, you know, they start wars, they're wrecking the planet, they're finding sneaky and corrupt ways to make money, but they also can compose symphonies and write poetry and find cures for diseases and harness the energy of the sun and the wind to power our homes. So I think, you know, the purpose of a spiritual practice is to free our minds from this heavy conditioning so that we can focus on the skillful, the creative, the kind, and the joyful side of the human experience. So what is human joy? Well, I read an definition also. Okay. But first, I want to tell you what it's not. Okay, it's not the little flash of happiness that we get when something that we've been craving, finally get it, right? It's like, oh, if only I had this job, then I'd be happy. Or if only this person liked me, I'd be happy. Or if only I had some ice cream, I'd be happy. And we get it, and then we're happy for a few little bit. And then all of a sudden it's, well, if only I had a promotion, or if only this person I'm with wasn't so irritating, or if only I could lose 10 pounds from eating ice cream. That's not joy. That's not what we're talking about. So the definition I read is that joy is a deep, lasting inner state rather than just a fleeting emotion. And one thing that I have noticed from my own experience is that joy is in the present. It's in the process. It's not that we don't set goals, we do, and have the goal somewhere in your mind, but focus on the process, because that's where joy is. So then, how does faith lead to joy? Does faith lead to joy in my life, you know? And I just read a book by Sharon Salzberg, and it's called Faith, and she was talking about the stages of faith, and she described three stages of faith. And so I was thinking about the relationship of these stages of faith to joy. So first she calls the first stage bright faith. That's when you're inspired by a teacher, something you've read or something, you know, and you found it, this is it, you're going to be enlightened, you know. And that is a very joyful period. But it's also, I call it the honeymoon period. And we all know about honeymoons. They don't last. So the next stage is verifying joy. And you're saying, okay, does this work? Does this work? Is this working in my life? And you begin to, you know, one day, oh, yes, it's working. The next day, oh, I don't know, you know. And I think, you know, joy kind of comes and goes in that stage. But then, according to her, we go to the last stage, which is abiding faith. And that's it. You've convinced yourself it does work and you're just there. But I'm thinking, should abiding faith lead to abiding joy? Because I have thought, well, I must be in that stage. I've been doing this for so long, right? But I'm not always joyful. So I think for me, there is another stage of faith. And it comes between verifying faith and abiding faith, and I call it stubborn faith. This is when, okay, I know this works, I'm not feeling it now, but I know it works, and I'm not quitting. And I don't know that that's such a joyful stage, but I think it's necessary, for me anyway. And I go back and forth, you know. I think I go back and forth. And even back to verifying joy, every time, every month when we get a new topic, I'm saying, okay, how does this work in my life? You know? And so now I'm looking, okay, how does this faith and joy stuff work in my life? Do I have examples? So I'm thinking back to my latest adventure, which many of you know about. A week before Christmas, I slipped on a very muddy hill behind my apartment and I broke my right arm. And, you know, there have been many times since I've been doing this practice when my initial reaction to something is kind of negative and unskillful, but I see it, I catch it, and then I sit with it, and gradually a more wholesome response starts to take over. But this time, when I fell and broke my arm, and this, it still astonishes me in a way, because if I had thought, okay, I'm going to break my arm, I would have thought my reaction would be quite negative. But when it happened, I'm like, you know, I'm there in the mud, and I get up, and I can see the arm is broken. No question about it. And I'm thinking, okay, this doesn't look good, but it's going to be what it's going to be. And I can either be miserable and make everybody else miserable or not. And it was clear what the choice was. And when I look back on that, I really can see that that was an expression of faith. Faith that this practice is strong enough that I would be able to be present with the process of healing. And as I look back on it, now that I'm close to the end of it, yes, there were hassles. There have been hassles. There was certainly physical discomfort. But there has also been an amazing amount of joy, and from very unexpected sources. For example, when I had the cast on my right arm, couldn't do anything with my right hand. Just figuring out how to do things with my left hand was surprisingly joyful. It's like, oh, look, I can do this. I can open a jar with my left hand in my armpit, or I can use my teeth, you know. I felt like a little kid. And then when I got the cast off, there was the joy of getting my functionality back. For example, the piano. Okay, I have been playing piano since I was 8 years old. I love to play the piano, and I'm actually pretty good at it after doing it all these years. And so when I got my cast off, I mean, before, I obviously it was impossible with the cast, but when I got the cast off, and my hand hurt, everything was sore, but I came home and I immediately sat down at the piano, and I could not even get my hand in position to play a single note. But I was not frustrated. I knew it was coming back, because I could feel the music was in my fingers. It was still there. And so then I started physical therapy a couple days later, and a couple days after that, I sat down again and I was able to play one octave of the C scale, and I was so excited. I was texting all my friends and family, I played the C scale, and they're texting back, that's awesome, congratulations. And then a couple days later, I could play arpeggios and chords, and then it was a one-page prelude. And, you know, I'm still not ready to play the Pathetique Sonata. Sorry, Jason, but I'm not. But it's coming. It's coming. And then I thought about, well, what if I had injured myself to the point where I could not play again? What if that had happened? And, you know, I mean, this is hypothetical, but I do have faith that the practice would take me through the adjustment, and it would lead to a different kind of joy, the joy of letting go, which is the ultimate joy in this life, right? And the other source of joy in this process is the joy of the human connections. All the support that I got from my friends, my family, my neighbors, and the healers. Every single healer that I met in the ER, in the orthopedic clinic, and at the physical therapists, yeah, they did what they physically needed to do for my hand, or my arm, yeah. But they also were so kind and so generous with their attention. I mean, this is what they do all day long. And because of the choice I had made, I was able to meet each one with a smile, even after 8 hours in the ER. Yeah. Yeah, so in these difficult times that we are living in, we are seeing a lot of the negative side of the human mind. We're seeing a lot of corruption, cruelty, the three poisons, greed, hatred, and delusion, they're all out there. But I think it's really important to remember that most people prefer kindness. I really do believe that. There's something I have to talk about. How many of you saw the halftime show from the Super Bowl? Yeah. Bad Bunny. Okay, I confess I had never heard of Bad Bunny. But when I started hearing various people talking about, oh, this is going to be so un-American, and he's going to talk in Spanish. Well, I had to see it, of course. And I was just totally charmed. I mean, all of the problems of Puerto Rico were represented. You know, the slavery, the colonialism, the damage from the hurricane that still has not all been repaired. And yet there was so much joy in that show, so much love of community. And I thought, and that sign that said, the only thing stronger than hate is love. And I thought, this is it. This is the power of the human spirit to rise above the difficulties. You know, we can do it. And sometimes we rise above them. Sometimes we have to go through the difficulties. Sometimes we have to work with them a bit. And sometimes it takes faith to remember that joy is there, but it's always there. It's always available. It is a mind state that is available to us. So I want to end also with a poem. I always have a poem. And this poem is a summer poem, and I know we're not in summer, but we are at the beginning of blossom time. And when I read this poem, I immediately thought of the blossoms as representing faith and the peaches as representing joy. From Blossoms by Lee Young Lee. From blossoms comes this brown paper bag of peaches we bought from the boy at the bend in the road where we turned toward signs painted peaches. From laden boughs, from hands, from sweet fellowship in the bins, comes nectar at the roadside, succulent peaches we devour, dusty skin and all. Comes the familiar dust of summer, dust we eat. Oh, to take what we love inside, to carry within us an orchard, to eat not only the skin, but the shade, not only the sugar, but the days, to hold the fruit in our hands, adore it, then bite into the round jubilance of peach. There are days we live as if death were nowhere in the background, from joy to joy to joy, from wing to wing, from blossom, to impossible blossom, to sweet, impossible blossom. Thank you. So now we have about 20 minutes for any questions or comments. Here's your microphone. Oh, you want that one? Okay.
I'll be too tempted to do a
mic drop. Oh, yeah, we don't want that. Okay. So online, you can raise your virtual hand, if you know how to do that. There's a, at the bottom, you'll either see a raise hand button or you'll see a react button. And here, Just raise your hand and somebody's going to bring a microphone, and there it is. So, anybody have a question or a comment? Yes, there is a question. And you can address the question to either Tamira or me or both or either.
It's not a question.
Or
it's
a
statement of, I felt like when you both finished your piece that we were supposed to stand up and applaud. It was like, no, we're not supposed to do that. So thank you both, because I know it takes a lot to get up there.
Thank you. Okay, yes, there's another one.
I don't know if, I'll just ask, is there, and this is a question to both of you, what is the difference between joy and gratitude? Or is there a difference?
I think that gratitude is a particular kind of joy. I mean, I think joy certainly leads to gratitude. And gratitude is certainly a joyful experience. But maybe it's just a different emphasis. What do you think?
I'm thinking about this.
Tamira's thinking. Yeah, I'm trying to think of an example of joy where gratitude wasn't involved, and I can't. Because joy is something that we are grateful for, right? Oh, to get you in the picture. Yeah. Uh-huh. Anybody else have a thought on that? Yeah.
My thought has been that in my experience, when I practice gratitude, joy, it's like a seed to me for joy. Mm-hmm. The gratitude seeds the joy in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And maybe the reverse is also true. The joy feeds the gratitude, right? Yeah. Yes, back there.
I think there's a pretty intimate connection between those two ideas. In the Brahma Viharas, one of the Brahma Viharas, these four sort of qualities that are sort of boundless, one of them is this concept of mudita. And mudita is often translated as joyous gratitude. And especially this gratitude that you have that's sort of light, it's not so somber, it's really tied to the sense of how connected you are to others, the joy that you find in others, especially in others' connection, and that gratitude that comes from that. So I think joy and gratitude are really deeply bound together, I think, in the Dharma.
Yeah, I think so too. It's kind of like different flavors of the same thing. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I was just thinking about gratitude and joy. Sometimes my brain works slowly. Are we going to get feedback?
No.
Okay. Yeah, it feels like for me with gratitude, there's an object.
Or maybe you can hit the red button.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like for me, with gratitude, there's an object to the feeling of goodness or appreciation, and joy seems to, it's a form of gratitude, but it arises without necessarily having an object. It's just this underlying sense of delight in the world and everything. But it doesn't require anything to trigger it. It's just what I am, I guess, in some moments.
Yeah, because yeah, like we're grateful for something. But...
Yeah, I was kind of thinking about maybe somebody's died and like you're mourning the death and you have somebody close to you who's supporting you and like feeling gratitude for, you know, the support system in a difficult moment, but you know, I could feel really grateful for that, but joy, I wouldn't necessarily say that there's joy there, you know?
Mm, uh-huh. Yeah, that's an interesting point, yeah. Yeah, and joy, I don't know, but it seems like sometimes it's more subdued, almost hidden, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, and then yet it's still there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
So I'm thinking a lot about this idea of joy in a world that there's so much pain, and in recent months I have been saying to myself that think geologically, you know, and looking out at the moon and the stars and thinking about, you know, the creation of our solar system and the timeline of our human existence being relatively a short blip, and there were dinosaurs and that was a completely different ecology and that went away, but something else came back. And so in that, there, for me, is some kind of maybe what you had just said about this sort of more subtle joy in the amazingness of our mere existence here, in spite of all the pain and everything that comes along with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and joy also, I guess the main thing I learned from my arm experience is the extent to which joy is a choice. You know? Yeah. Anybody online have anything to say? Yeah, come on. Oh, there we go.
Here, let me say something real quick.
They are going to say something, and then we will go to Deb.
I'll try not to have feedback happen. I think all the sorrow in the world cannot nullify our joy, right? They can coexist with each other. And sometimes when things get really, really difficult, we can forget that there's joy, we can lose sight of the joy, or we can think that it's not okay to have joy in the face of all the terrible things happening, but the joy is what gets us through, right? And I think it's important to keep in touch with the joy. I was on retreat with Tim. This was, I forget what had happened, something awful in the world, and my approach was sort of to hold these two things together, but I was still struggling because it was very painful. And I asked Tim in the interview group, I said, you know, how do you handle this? And he said, yeah, it's heartbreaking, and I keep my finger on the pulse of joy as well. I'm paraphrasing, but we forget that the joy is there too. And I think it's important to keep our finger on that pulse as well, and also see the sorrow and the chaos in the world. You know, as I said earlier, the joy is what will sustain us through all of this. Well, that's part of it anyway. There's many things that I don't want to rule out the others, but joy is key. It's rejuvenating. So yeah. Keeping both and remembering that, you know, sorrow is one of these beautiful things, sorrow or fear or everything, is these beautiful aspects of being human. Like, they're painful and they're so deeply human, and there can be a joy in just seeing that humanity and the depth of our humanity too.
Okay, we have a couple people online. Deb?
Thanks both of you for your talk tonight. I really enjoyed it. I did want to ask for a little more clarification or speaking to the idea. I think Tamara, I think maybe you said this, but that joy is not based on something outside of us which I totally get. However, I can relate to when I'm walking outside here in my community in the woods and by the ocean, and I will look at what is before me, and a sense of joy arises. Mm-hmm. Where, what's the location of that joy? Mm-hmm. It feels like it's inside me, but it also feels like it is sparked by the fact that I'm looking at ocean waves or fir trees or harbor seals or whatever I'm looking at, I think. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's a mistake to say, oh, the harbor seal, I see it and it causes me joy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how would you see that? Is that outside of me? Is it inside of me? Is it a play back and forth between the two? What's happening?
Is this, okay, this is on. So you're seeing something that, here, I'm recapping what you said, that you see something and it allows your heart to open and joy comes through. Yeah.
It certainly is an adequate description of it. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And there are certain things that make it easier for your heart to open and for the joy to shine through. And what if it were possible for anything to do that? Then where is the location of the joy?
Right. I guess that's the question. Yeah. So if it's a sadness, like if I'm watching the evening news and there's no harbor seals lately on the evening news, as we know, so then do I see joy there? It's harder. It certainly is a lot harder. It's a lot harder, actually. Yeah.
Well, I mean, all of, as Tamara was saying too, I mean, sorrow, grief, these other human emotions are also beautiful in their own way. And I don't think we want to just say, oh, I'm going to find joy in everything, you know, I'm going to find joy in the news or whatever. You know, we have to be honest with what we're feeling. And that's, like I'm saying, sometimes we have to go through the difficulties to find joy. We have to be with the sorrow or the fear or whatever it is, you know. And then our perspective does start to shift. Like you were saying, I understand this taking the long view, right? Nothing lasts forever. Dictators don't last forever. Wars don't last forever. Nothing lasts forever. And this too shall pass, right? And there is a kind of joy in just the sweep of the human experience.
I'll add one thing. I think that, it's really important for that we don't let the pain of the world, make us forget that joy is there too. And that feels like an important thing that's happened for me on the path, is the ability to hold multiple emotions at the same time and to not forget about things. And what Judith was saying about honesty is absolutely true. Like it is heartbreaking what's happening, and we can contact that heartbreak fully and feel it. And alongside that, for example, recognize that here we are, 100 of us together committed to kindness, and that's beautiful, and there's joy in that too. And so I think part of the path is developing the capacity to hold both or multiple emotions at the same time, to not forget.
Okay, Emery. I think, yes.
Hi, thanks so much, you two. What a treat tonight. Hi, neighbor. Tamir is my Portland area neighbor. So my question will sound a little flippant, but it's not. And it's like on the transcendental dependent origination path that we're on, you know, this is step 2, joy, you know, faith and then joy. And why should we go any further? Like, if we found joy, like, I'm satisfied. Like, I'm good to go. If I've found joy, then I'll just pause and just hang out here. So, but I know that there's probably a really good reason that the path goes forward.
Yeah. It's actually step three, because the first step is suffering.
Okay.
And I mean, rapture's coming, you know.
So I don't know.
Can I have a car when the rapture comes?
You have to wait till next month. We don't get raptured until next month. Yeah, well, I mean, and I think, you know, you don't have to go all the way. Not everybody does, right? Do you want to be liberated or not? You know, it's your choice. Or you just want to hang around and enjoy for a while. That doesn't sound so bad. Yeah.
I have a flippant response to Emery, since you have named your question as flippant. If you stop clinging to going further down the path, then you're probably going to go tumbling further down the path by the lack of clinging. So I apologize, but rapture is in your future.
Next month. I'll take it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we have one more. Okay.
Well, we could get a non-flippant.
No, I think that's perfect. Let's let him answer.
Okay.
Because we only have a couple minutes, few minutes.
So I've been struggling a lot with the concept of community, especially outside the Sangha, because specifically I've been struggling with how to have community without attachment and suffering. Community organizing has brought me a lot of suffering, and yearning for community that politics and imperialism has made difficult or impossible has brought me a lot of suffering. And even to bring it to something a bit smaller, even just like my connection with like my houseplants has brought me a lot of suffering, because I feel immense guilt and pain when a tropical plant that I've forced to live in the Pacific Northwest doesn't make it. So I during the meditation tonight, I was feeling a lot of those thoughts, and what came over me was this sense of, as someone mentioned, gratitude that I was able to feel some of that pain, and like gratitude that my heart was open to even know the community that I want, even if I can't have it. And that was a really freeing experience, but it leaves me trying to figure out, like, how do you have community without attachment? And I guess a similar question would be, is what I was feeling really suffering, or a sort of pain that is not really suffering, is not this dukkha that we were trying to avoid, but something else? I can't quite figure that out. I'm curious your thoughts.
Well, I mean, there will be pain, right? But then do we add to it? I mean, like, the Buddha had a bad back. That's the, you know, he had pain in his back, but he was still joyful, right?
So that joy can be right alongside suffering.
Yes, it can. And I even had a little taste of that with my broken arm.
True.
Right? You know? Yeah, it can. It's do we shoot that second arrow or not? Right. Yeah. So it is 9:00. I would just like to say, in closing, any merit that we have accrued tonight, may it be for the benefit of all people. Thank you so much, everyone. It's been wonderful to be here with you.